For this week's tips, pointers, and just advice, we'll call it. I still have to find a good name for this. I know I've said this now a couple of times. I got to find a good name for these episodes, something a little catchier than that. But we're bringing back a really good friend of this podcast. And coincidentally, I'm recording this on the 3-year anniversary. It'll probably be a few weeks after the 3-year anniversary, but it just happens to be the 3-year anniversary of the Papa Bear Hikes podcast. So I'd like to welcome back our friend Samir. Welcome back.
So, Martin, it's nice to see you. Nice to be back on the podcast and excited to talk to you guys about, I'm not talking about any gear today specifically, but just kind of want to talk about a trail I've always had in the back of my head that I love to, I think not a lot of people know about. And once people know about it, they find it pretty interesting.
Yeah. And we spoke a little bit about the trail you're going to cover. And I want to say this, that, you know, we cover a lot of the trails here in the States, but we've been talking more. And last time we were on, we talked about a hike you did outside of the country that you did abroad. And we've had a couple of people on over the summer. So I think our listeners are really going to want to hear about this trail that you're going to tell us about.
So if you had heard my last episode, the last hike that I had done was called the Kumano Kodo in Japan. And it's kind of like anywhere from like 40 to 100, you know, 20-ish miles, depending on which route you take. And it basically is just an ancient kind of hike over 1,000 years old that visits different Buddhist temples in a mountain region in central southern Japan. So this next trail I want to talk about, it's actually a lot bigger version of that kind of same kind of a hike. So it's called the Shikoku Pilgrimage. Shikoku is an island, one of the, you know, smaller islands offset from Japan. It's a little bit more rural, and it's kind of like there's a lot of like rice paddies, kind of different cultural aspect to it. But I was always interested in this hike, the Shikoku Pilgrimage. And so when I finished the Kumano Kodo during the summer or during the spring, I actually took a ferry to Shikoku to the start, I guess, of this hike. Basically, it's an 800-ish mile. I think it's 745 miles. But obviously, with any hike, you end up hiking a lot more than you expect. So around 800 miles. And it basically is a loop that circumvents the island of Shikoku. And it visits, instead of like the hike I did, which visited three Buddhist temples, this one visits 88 temples. So it's also called the 88 Temple Pilgrimage. And it's like, I'm Muslim, and I did the Kumano Kodo, which is like a Buddhist pilgrimage. And so I always, even though it's not really my practice, I just find it interesting, this idea of pilgrimage and, you know, kind of morphing the idea of a hike for fun really into some sort of spiritual awakening or aspect. So I always thought the Shikoku Pilgrimage sounded really interesting. The first temple it starts at is called Ryozenji, and that's the temple I had visited at the end of my hike, just to kind of see what it was like, you know, for people starting this pilgrimage. And, you know, the temple was very beautiful. There's like thousands of lanterns just hung up in the center of it. I have some cool pictures of it. But what I really thought was interesting about me visiting there was I started to see people who were starting this pilgrimage. Like, I didn't really realize, like, I thought it was late in the season, so I didn't think I'd meet any hikers, but I was just standing there in the temple, and then you see people walk up with the hiker's kind of outfit. And so this outfit is really interesting. It's basically like a white top, white bottom, conical kind of like straw hat, kind of like some other garb like that goes on your top kind of. But then the most important part, I think, is the staff that hikers carry. So they'll carry like a typical, you know, wood staff. But what I thought was interesting about like learning more about this hike was that the staff itself is supposed to symbolize the creator of this pilgrimage. So it was created, it's over 1200 years old. And the concept of it was created by a Buddhist monk named Kukai, who also is known as Kobo Daishi. So he's basically, he became the founder of esoteric Shingon Buddhism, which is a dominant sect in Japan. Like all the temples that I had hiked last spring were also a similar practice. He's had a huge influence in Japan and Japanese culture. And this pilgrimage, even though it's in a rural island, it's very popular and it's considered, you know, a really impressive thing to hike the whole 800 miles. But obviously not everyone can do that. So a lot of people will kind of hybridize it with biking or driving or my wife's aunt, she completed the pilgrimage, but she said that with work and, you know, just time off, it wasn't realistic to, you know, do 2 months of hiking. So she completed it over different years by, you know, driving there, taking buses. So people complete it in different ways, which is the reason why like hundreds of thousands of people, I think every year, complete this pilgrimage. And another really cool aspect of it, besides the outfit and the fact that you're visiting, you know, 88 temples, so you're constantly kind of reminded of the spirituality aspect. I thought it was cool that when you do go to these temples, you have a book, and at each temple has a specific writing character that represents it in Japanese text. And so there'll be a person at each temple does the paint calligraphy in your book of the symbols for that temple, and then they'll stamp it. And so people who finish this hike will have, you know, a book of 88 stamps and beautiful calligraphy. So I think that's got to be one of the coolest hiking trophies anyone can get. I thought my Arizona Trail copper buckle was cool. And then you hear about some 88 signature book from, you know, temples in a mountain region of Japan. It just sounds amazing. And I looked at my wife's aunt's book, actually, when we were in Japan, and we were talking about this hike after I did the Kumano Kodo. And it was just really cool to kind of see that. I have like a small stamp book from my hike. But I've seen that now that I've seen the book from this Shikoku pilgrimage, it's just a really beautiful kind of memory that I think people have of the hike. And another aspect that I find cool, just being Muslim, we pray each day and we purify ourselves with water. And it's kind of something, although Buddhism is obviously not the same thing as Islam, I've seen a lot of similar aspects, especially like when you go to these temples, there's a water purification as well. Pilgrims recite different mantras that you're supposed to say at each temple. And then another really cool aspect of it is, since it's a loop and it goes through four different like states or regions of the island of Shikoku, each of the four regions symbolizes a different kind of part of the hike. So the first region symbolizes your, you know, awakening. The next region symbolizes discipline. I think it's kind of a little bit hard section to get through. The third section represents enlightenment, and it's when you're kind of making your loop back around the island. And then the last section is supposed to represent like nirvana, or like an attained awakening. And it ends at the same temple that it starts at. I don't think the last temple is the first temple, but once you finish that 88th temple, you are supposed to return to the main temple, and kind of it has you basically, you know, forces you to reflect, which is a lot of people don't, you know, have the time to do, but on a hike that's 800 miles, it's probably something really important to do. Reflect on the experience you had and how you've become a better person, or what you've learned about yourself. 'Cause 800 miles will definitely teach you a lot about yourself. And since it is in a rural region, some people do hike. I've heard of, you know, foreigners hiking, but a lot of people just book ryokans, like the kind of the accommodations I had on my hike, where you'll stay at an inn where they'll, you know, make food. There's maybe a shower or an onsen, like a hot tub, and then kind of continue on the next day. But the last thing about this hike that I found really interesting is this idea that people have, that your staff represents kukai, right? That monk. And you as a hiker, especially you as a pilgrim, especially as a hiker who's doing the whole thing by foot, you're really viewed as an embodiment of kukai. So people, there's a practice called omotesando, where people just give offerings of food. You know, if they see you hiking, people come up to you and give you a bag of apples or something. And everyone that I've ever heard talk about this hike or write about it talks about that aspect being amazing. And I just thought it was a funny way to think about trail magic, like how we think about trail magic in like US hiking culture. That's like real trail magic, and people doing it not just because you're hiking and doing something badass, but because they really view you as accomplishing something, and their contribution to your hike by giving you food is, you know, them being a part of it. So I think that's pretty beautiful. And just all those aspects, just the what people wear, what people eat, how people, you know, camp or sleep, the visiting all the temples. I just think all of those things make it such a unique kind of hike. It kind of reminds me of Camino, but in a very Japanese way. And obviously these temples are, you know, they're beautiful. If you're from the West, it's probably an amazing experience every day to visit new temples. So I just kind of wanted to talk about it because there's a lot of, you have a lot of different listeners. You have people who don't through hike, you have people who are thinking about it, and you have people who have done 10, 20 hike. But whenever you want to shake it up and really put yourself in out of your comfort zone, I think it's cool to think about these international hikes. And Japan seems to really be on the upswing of, I mean, this trail and the trail I had hiked, the Kumano Kodo, they're 1,200 years old, which is so old, right? But it's also, the country seems to be kind of really enjoying the emergence of their backpacking and cottage gear culture and stuff. So all these companies are popping up, new trails. I've made a lot of international friends online and in person in Japan, and they're all really interesting hikers. And I think that country is going to keep on, you know, adding trails. And I know they're trying to make their own version of a long distance trail that goes across the whole country. So I think they should be on everyone's radar as a destination hiking place. It's just one of the coolest places I think anyone could visit. I might be biased to that since my wife's Japanese and I have all this family out there now, and it's been so cool to visit them. But I don't speak Japanese and I've been able to do some hiking there. So I think that barrier might be the biggest one for an American or Westerner trying to go there and hike. But I don't think it should put off anyone, because people out there are generally really kind and accepting as long as you're respectful of, you know, their space and their different culture, because it is very different. But yeah, so it's called the Shikoku Pilgrimage.
Yeah, and I'm listening. You described this trail, Samir, and I think of the Camino. Before we go any further, something very important you said is being respectful of other people. That goes very far when you're in somebody else's backyard, so to speak, when you're visiting. Be respectful. But back to my point about the Camino, you as a Muslim going over there, experiencing, being exposed and learning about Buddhism. I grew up Catholic. The Camino, okay, that's not a foreign language to me, but for me to go over there, and I just really believe that when we open ourselves up, we go in with an open mind and we learn about other faiths, because these are faith-based hikes, the Camino and the hikes that you've been taking in Japan. I think it just broadens us, and in some cases, I think can just reinforce our faith and wake us up to say, you know what, we have a lot more in common than we maybe thought we did.
Yeah, and it's easier, like with, you're talking about Catholicism and I'm talking about Islam. It's pretty easy with the Abrahamic religions. If you're open-minded, I think that you really see how similar they are more than how different they are. At least that's my experience, because like I grew up Muslim and my dad's from Syria, but my mom is just American and white, and I look just white. So I think that my identity growing up, I was, you know, I grew up Muslim, but I always had this like foot in both camps, you know. But as an adult, I've definitely, I think hiking specifically, whether it's Arizona Trail, Colorado Trail, JMT, Kumano Kodo, long trip, like whether it's any of those trails, they've all really reinforced kind of my confidence in myself. And in that way, they caused me to reflect on, you know, my spirituality. And in that way, I think, because you can't just be, you're not going to be able to be a Buddhist going to Saudi Arabia and doing like the Muslim pilgrimage, the Hajj. You have to be Muslim to do that, and you have to prove it too. So I think the aspect that I am Muslim, but I was able to do this hike from a completely different culture. And it's also, you know, the hike itself, it's not as old as Islam is, but it's, you know, in the same era of history. So it's just really interesting to me as like a history and, you know, environmental, you know, nerd. I think it's really cool to check out a terrain that's completely different. And that's what Japan felt like. You know, I was like sweating all day and everything, but also just the fact that I was visiting, instead of the end of my day being where, how far I could hike and where I could set up camp, I was just really focused on getting to these temples, experiencing them, kind of learning more, understanding what the history is of each temple. Because I could imagine on my hike on the Kumano Kodo, there was, even between the temples, there would be kind of kiosks and info, kind of like wood placards in the middle of nowhere. And it would talk about like a person or a monk who sat at this very rock and passed away or something like that. It's like, it really gives you context to how many people have done this hike over 1200 years. So with the Shikoku Pilgrimage, knowing that more people do that hike, I just feel like or more people do that pilgrimage, but not everyone hikes it. So if you're someone that loves to hike and you're interested in other histories and other, you know, not a lot of people like to talk about religion, but I mean, religion is an important part of human history. And, you know, it's interesting to learn about religions you actually don't know that much about. And I think that Japan as a case study is like, you can hike there, you can learn a lot of history. It's completely different from Western history. People are kind. All that it requires is that you're respectful and kind of have an open mind. So I think it's cool because it's like, I know there's trails in Ecuador and trails in Canada and trails like in every country has trails that, you know, we don't know about or not everyone knows about. When you kind of learn of them, it kind of gets, it's like a pilot light kickstart, you know, an idea. So I just hope in talking about it today, someone listening might, you know, either they'll learn more about this hike or maybe they'll want to do it eventually, or they'll talk to their friend who's like a hardcore hiker and interested in Buddhism or even not interested in it, and they might, you know, learn more about it. I think the more we know about different hikes that aren't just a through hike, point to point or anything like that, I think the more like open our perspectives on just the whole world are. I would love to learn about trails in other countries, but for the time being, like Japan has so many, and like I said, I had just gotten married in the spring and we have family out there, and I'm looking forward to kind of exploring these trails more. And hopefully one day, I mean, like I was talking to you before the podcast, I just started like a 2-year master's program in environmental science. And so I'm going to be kind of busy the next 2 years, but I hope one day, you know, if I could scrounge up the time to actually do this hike, because I know it'll always be in the back of my brain as like, you know, a potential hike if I could somehow get two months off of whatever is in the future. But like I was saying, people do it in sections too. If you're even just interested in checking out 10, 20 miles of it, you know, you want to just go to a few temples, I think it's worth it. And if you only have that amount of time, it's worth it. People do the same thing, you know, the AZT or PCT. They'll just do a weekend or something and realize like, wow, I can't believe that trail exists. Like it's a privilege to have walked to set foot on it.
And I like talking about these trails because I've had guests on who have said this. I have a friend who feels this way. They're just not into tent camping, you know, where it's like, I'm getting older and the whole idea is sleeping on the ground every night for 2 months. You know, the approach of hiking these trails is different. It's difficult. You're doing a lot of hiking every day, but the overnight accommodations could be appealing to that hiker that just, like I said, setting up the tent, sleeping on the ground, and all the chores that go into camp on your on what we as Americans identify as backpacking. It's a different approach.
Yeah, I think we talked about this in my last episode, is like, it kind of reminds me of that European style, like hiking to like chalets or, you know, getting coffee in the mountain. Japan has like some tea houses in the mountain, or even remains from ancient tea houses along certain hikes. It's a different culture, and you can camp, but the thing about like this hike and some of the other hikes is like, you can't just camp anywhere though. It's not like the PCT where, you know, you're on, you know, forest land, and, you know, only when you're in a national park do you have to make sure you have a permit. No, it's not really like that. It's, you know, a lot of the land is owned by people and you may not disturb them, but I'm sure if you own a rice paddy and you see some tent just set up on the edge of it, you feel kind of disrespected. So the style of staying at a ryokan is super fun. You know, you get a comfortable futon to sleep on, you get a shower, but the coolest part is you get delicious Japanese meal. And a lot of times, especially in Shikoku too, it's just fresh fish, like fresh sashimi. And so maybe if you don't like sushi, it wouldn't be the easiest hike to do for 2 months, but I think that's such a cool experience, you know, like experiencing other cultures. Food is one of the biggest, you know, parts of that. And if you can be hiking and every day get people bringing you food offerings and people, you know, you get to try out different food and every morning and every night, that just sounds very entertaining. Like you don't have to carry 8 days of food in your bag or something. It's a different kind of hiking, right?
All right, Samir, one more time, you give us the name of the trail. So I've got it written down, and you've said it a number of times, you tell us, because I'll probably screw it up.
Yeah, so it's called the Shikoku Pilgrimage, and it's spelled Shikoku, and that's the name of the island that this hike takes place on. So if you found it interesting to hear about, definitely Google it, look at the map of it, because it's pretty interesting. And seeing how spaced out all the temples are, it's, you know, it's really kind of cool to put yourself in the place of someone hiking it. So hopefully one day we'll get to hike it.
Right. And everybody, meanwhile, go out and look it up. It sounds like a really interesting trail. Samir, once again, it's always a pleasure talking to you. Thank you for sharing this information with us. And hopefully we've motivated some people to travel to Japan and check out the Shikoku Trail. Thanks again. And look forward to speaking to you again.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Martin.
Everybody, remember, get outside, have some fun, and be safe. Thanks for listening. If you haven't done so yet, go to our website, papabearhikes.com. Listen to past episodes. Check us out on social media. Go to our YouTube channel, Martin Outside. All those links are there. In addition to that, you can buy our book or see what you're missing out on if you're not a Patreon member yet. Remember to get outside, have fun, and be safe. This episode of Papa Bear Hikes has been brought to you by Avalon Publicity. Avalon Publicity, increasing the digital footprint of content creators and skilled professionals via website development and social media services. For more information about Avalon Publicity, go to their website, avalonbusiness.org. That's avalonbusiness.org.